Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hello, I'm Larry Mueller, and before we get started, I want to thank everybody who attended the Brewers game yesterday, Wisconsin Public Radio folks. We had a great listener party beforehand, and the game was a lot of fun. The Brewers won, so we were really enjoying the day. And one of the people came up to me, one of the listeners came up to me and said, "You know who my favorite guest is on Garden Talk?" And I said, "No, who?" And he said, "Bob Tomish. He's got the answers to all of the questions, and he does it in a good, fast way, and he gets a lot of questions answered." So you know what? Here's Bob Tomish with us again today. Bob, great to have you
back. I'm glad you called me at midnight when you got home last night.
Bob's a senior lecturer in the Department of Horticulture at the UW-Madison and UW Extension, and he's going to be answering your gardening questions. And we can talk flowers and shrubs and vegetables, certainly, and trees, pretty much anything that might be on your mind in the gardening area. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. And how's your garden looking, by the way, Bob?
We won't talk about that.
Oh, my tomatoes are just producing, I'm telling you.
They are, you know, the warm weather has really brought things on more rapid than usual. We're already finding like Paula red apple and red free, and some of those are ripe already.
Yeah.
And they're going to go through that ripe phase very fast with this hot temperatures we've had. Normally we figure 10 to 14 days, and I'm guessing in about 8 days they're going to be from almost squeaky tasteable from green to, well, that was mealy.
So it'll go fast.
It's going to go fast, right?
Oh. Well, Carl and Amory has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Carl.
Hi there.
What can we do for you?
Oh, I've got a question about my peppers. Everything in the garden is doing really well, like you were just saying, everything nice and warm and wet. But the peppers are failing to produce entirely, and I haven't had that problem before. I'm wondering if you had any insight on that.
Yes. Peppers are a very sensitive plant. If it's too cool, which it hasn't been, or if it gets too hot, the flowers abort. And if you're on some sandier soil, and you probably experience that they're just not getting enough water. So you can irrigate them or water them on a regular basis. It'll cause those flowers to develop into fruit. And peppers are uniquely different from a lot of other plants. They tend to have a flowering phase, and then they go through about a three-week wait period, and then another flower phase. And right at the time when the flowers are starting, if it was quite dry and hot, that's what happened. They aborted.
Well, it's been hot, but it hasn't been dry.
No.
Well, it's still the hot temperatures caused that to happen.
All right,
thanks.
All right, thanks, Carl. Doesn't help with the peppers, but now you know why.
Yeah, peppers are probably a more sensitive plant than any of those that we have out there in terms of heat stress.
And then, too, if you plant too early in the spring and you get a cold snap early.
Yep. Anytime we have temperatures below 50 degrees at night, flowers will start aborting. So those people in the northern half of the state, sometimes I'll get calls, we just haven't had any peppers. What's happening? Well, you look back at the weather patterns, and normally if it's been cool at night down in that 45, 50 degree range, it's caused some of those flower buds to abort too. So we're at the other end of the spectrum this year. But
that's for sure. Well, Jay in Waukesha is up next with a question. Hi, Jay.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about tomatoes. I have three tomato plants, a Wisconsin 55, a Roma, and I believe a Cherry 100. And what's happening is I'm getting brown spots on the leaves. The leaves turn yellow, and then they turn brown, and they're falling off, especially at the bottom of the plant. I was wondering if you could tell me something about what might be happening.
Well, you've got a fungal problem, and there's several that do impact tomatoes. The one you're experiencing probably is coming from the soil from either tomato leftover plants from last year if they had the disease. It's splashing up on the leaves, and then it just kind of keeps working its way up. The best way to protect them, to give you a couple of suggestions, and it's too late now, sorry we can't give you a Band-Aid, but at the time of planting, if you can start using a fungicide or or which could be an organic type like Bordeaux mix. That would be helpful. Some people will use mulch around the base of the plant, so when it does rain, those spores don't splash up on the plant. The other thing is when you do set out the plants, you can kind of pinch off the lower leaves and just have stem tissue for about the first 8 inches or so. And you have to do this 2-3 weeks into the growth pattern. So for next year, you might want to remember that.
Okay.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot. Appreciate your help.
Yeah, thanks, Jay, for calling. David in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, David.
Hi. I have an apple tree with a lot of apples being eaten, and it's not by squirrels or deer. I believe it's by bees. And I was wondering if either of you have ever heard of that, of some sort of a bee or wasp. It could be a wasp.
Yeah,
it's most likely wasp, and they're coming in for a couple of reasons. One is you probably have a high population. Normally, they're feeding on insects at this time, a higher protein type of thing. But when the sugars start developing the apple, they will come and feed on that, especially if there's been a wound, and the wound can occur from maybe an insect that's like a coddling moth or something that started the little small hole, and they start feeding around the edge of that hole. There's also if it were a hole that was put in there, there may be bacteria and things like that that they're feeding on, and they just keep proliferating outward. But they will feed on apples, usually when they're ripe.
Okay. Is there any way to control it? Because I've been on a spray program this whole summer with Malathion about every 2 weeks, but then I had about a 3-week stretch where I didn't do it. And once you know, many of the apples at the blossom end had the frass coming out, which I guess would indicate
coddling moth
or whatever.
And that's what they're feeding on is there's bacteria affiliated with that, I'm guessing. And so they're looking at that protein source.
Okay, so there's really, once they've started gnawing on the apple, it's a done deal.
Well, usually, there's not much I can do. If you come in with an insecticide, that should impact the wasps as well as the other insects that are problematic. Also, you might want to look at around your buildings and that if there's a high population of wasp nests or something like that, reduce those. That would help, too.
All right. There you have it. Thanks a lot for calling, David. And on to Jane in Sun Prairie. Hi, Jane.
Hello. We have a family cabin up about 45 minutes east of Stevens Point.
Okay.
It was built in the 1920s, and we recently had to replace the septic system. And we have this nice, great big mound now. My question is there anything that I can plant, maybe ornamental grasses, on top of that mound?
Yeah, there are some plants, perennials. I would stay away from woody plants that tend to have a deep root system. So usually the shallower grasses tend to be shallower. If you go on the Internet, University of Minnesota has a publication on planting or selected plantings for over mound systems.
Oh, really?
And I think you can go on the Internet and track that one down.
University of Minnesota Extension, probably.
Right.
Okay, terrific. That'll help solve our growing mowing problem.
Okay. I have that in one of my folders. I can't remember exactly, but they do have some grasses, and they have a number of perennials that they suggest. It should be shallow-rooted types of plants.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling. And Carrie in Wausau emailed in, can huge tomato plants be pruned this late in the season because they're bigger than they should be? Will this result in greater fruit production?
Well, when you prune, if you're pinching off the tip, well, here's what people prune. They prune the shoots that come out of the axils near the base of the plant, and that should be done earlier in the growing season to kind of keep a single stalk in production. Yeah. Otherwise, you'll end up with probably 4 or 5 stems coming someplace up on the plant and producing. So that should have been done already. You can take those out even now, and that'll tend to thin it out. But if you have them in a tomato cage, you're in for a little bit of a battle.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you could prune some of those back. Some people will, like on cherry tomatoes and some of the indeterminate types, will pinch off the top now around the 15th of August, and that'll tend to encourage the fruit that are below the plant to ripen. Especially if we have some cooler temperatures coming up, which maybe will happen.
Maybe will happen. All right, Mary in Whitewater, your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Bob. I have 2 questions about dwarf fruit trees.
Okay.
And the last time you were on, I believe you were sort of encouraging people to grow dwarf fruit trees in their yards. And I started a small orchard 4 or 5 years ago And I'm kind of crowding my dwarf trees. I have about 12 of them. They include dwarf peaches, dwarf nectarines, dwarf plums, and dwarf sweet cherries. And every spring, early in the spring, before they bud out, while it's still very cold, I prune them 25% to 30%, and I get all those inward-going branches. And by July, they all have just become giant, and I don't fertilize them either. So now they're about 15 to 20 feet tall.
Oh.
The whole idea of doing a dwarf orchard was so that I wouldn't have to go up on a ladder to get fruit. And this is the first year that they all actually produced a lot of blossoms, so I was sort of expecting some fruit. Instead, I have a lot of green. So I was wondering if they can be pruned a second time during the growing season, or if I should just always do it when it's really cold.
Did that full 15 or 20 feet happen all in one season? I doubt.
Yes. Mm. It's really amazing what they do. They sort of bolt.
It's, high nutrition will cause some of that, and usually when they're in the juvenile state. Right now, it would not be a good time to prune. They do pruning with summer pruning in July, usually.
Okay.
Mid-July, where they'll shorten things up. It's real common with the prunus, which would be the plums, the cherries.
Oh.
In fact, the cherry growers will kind of take a sickle bar over. They used to take it over the taller trees and cut those off, and they would leave maybe about 8 inches of growth, and then from that the buds would develop. So right now, if you were to prune, what it could be hazardous because the plant should be getting ready for winter.
Yeah.
So I'd just simply wait till next spring and then really shorten them up.
And I did almost kill one. I shortened it so much I was really mad at it. And then it didn't do very well, so I didn't touch it this spring.
Yeah. Usually I had a walk out at West Madison on Tuesday night. Mm-hmm. And we had probably 30 people out there. And I was pointing out some of the older trees, they tend to have less new growth on it. But the young trees are very vigorous. Some have, with all the rain we had this year, at 2 and 3 feet.
Yeah, these are very vigorous.
You have this much new growth, cut it back to about 8 inches and make life a lot easier. Plus, it gives you stronger scaffold branches and everything else.
You're saying I can do that second pruning then in July?
Yeah, usually around the 10th of July, somewhere
around, okay. And then my other question is of the, I have a real serious problem with peach leaf curl on the peaches, nectarines, and plums. And I hit them really early with Serenade, biological control. And I probably hit them 3 times, and I still got terrible peach leaf curl. It almost killed one of the peaches.
It will.
So any other suggestions?
Yeah, that's one that we suggest applying a fungicide in the fall. And you might have to go with something a little bit strong, and the spring.
Fall and spring.
Because the fungus survives under the bud scales of the buds. Uh-huh. And if you can get when the leaves are in the fall, get a couple applications. There's a bulletin on peach leaf curl. Uh-huh. And I would get that, and you might have to go beyond using something like Serenade.
Uh-huh.
You need a stronger punch on that one.
That's what I was wondering.
And
what are you all using?
Yep, and it will kill the plant eventually.
Uh-huh. What are you all using that's not
usually punch? We don't have to worry about peaches because they don't make the winter.
Yeah.
But in some of the southern areas, they will. I think I'd have to look at the list again, but I think Furbam is one of the materials on there. But there's a couple, three that they highly recommend.
And so that's at the UW Extension Learning Store.
Right.
Of the Learning Store.
Or
okay.
You can go over to the pathology department, and Huddleston has one there on peach leaf curl as well.
Okay.
So,
all right. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks, Mary. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. On this edition of Garden Talk, we're talking with Bob Tomish. Tomish
is right. Yeah.
I always want to say Tomish for some reason. Bob Tomish. Senior lecturer in the Department of Horticulture with UW-Madison and UW-Extension. I'm Larry Mueller, got my own name right,
yeah.
And Jim Packard, I got his name right too. He's our producer here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with Bob Tomish, our guest, and Ron in Sauk City. You are up next. Hi, Ron. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Just a comment. First of all, I had the blight on my tomatoes last year to the point where I got almost nothing. And I moved them, and this year they've got a little bit of a coming back, but they fruited out so nice that it's you know, the actual conditions, I think, overcame the blight. They won the race, so to speak. So I'm going to have tomatoes again this year. My question is this. I have a neighbor who has some very pretty, what we used to call paper birch, white birch trees.
Yep.
And they're probably only 3 or 4 years old, but they're being girdled. It looks like somebody took a drill and drilled holes in them. And they're very symmetrical. They run around the tree. But now, of course, the leaves are turning yellow, and it's nasty. Do you have any idea what that is?
Bronze birch borer.
Yeah, I'm guessing bronze birch borer is on there. What's happening is there's a when the trees are stressed, and if you're in a sandier area over in that area, I would highly recommend going in with about 3 or 4 inches of mulch and then watering the trees. But they're kind of at a later stage right now. I don't know if you can bring them back around. But what's happened is they were stressed for a couple of years, and then this insect lays an egg in that area between the bark and the wood, and you'll find a little white worm in there that's kind of going along chewing away in that zone. And I'm guessing the circular holes are probably woodpeckers coming after the worm. So, or larvae, I guess we better use the right word here. But so I would say, one, mulch, put them on a watering schedule. Sometimes you can get ahead of it. There are, if you could check at some of the garden centers, they have some systemic insecticides that you put around the root system, and that might help knock out the population. But when they're big, they have to eat a lot of it, and usually we need to get it on there at appropriate times so we take care of the little guys.
So is there any chance of saving them?
Well, if you tried mulching, watering, sometimes...
No, we just kind of looked at it the other day, and he said, boy, he was bummed, you know, because they're such pretty trees.
Yep. Yeah.
See, and, what you need to do is get him out of the stress mode. And if he's in a sandy area, which over near part of the state could be.
Plus there's a lot of walnut trees still in the neighborhood.
But about 4 inches of mulch out as far as the drip line of the tree would greatly help. It keeps the soil about 10 degrees cooler, and it keeps the moisture in there, and so it gives them a better chance.
Keep the mulch away from the bark.
Right from the trunk. Yeah, I mean,
right from the trunk, but then radiate it out. Several feet.
Yeah, as far as the drip line of the tree.
So woodpeckers can make those perfect holes like that?
Yeah.
It takes practice, but they do it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. So it's not really the woodpeckers. They're just...
No, they're just...
they're a sign that there's something else there. Oh, boy. Let's go to Paul in Duluth, Minnesota next. Hi, Paul.
Hi, guys. I've got like a million questions, but you've already answered some of them. The first thing, I'd never planted broccoli before, and what I have coming up, now these are all big container gardens that I have, I've got a really good floret, big, it's not as big as the ones you see in the grocery store, but should I be harvesting that now before it turns yellow?
Definitely. You want to, as soon as that floret starts to fill in, because it's going to get tougher and tougher as it gets before the flowering part.
Okay.
So
okay.
Get out there, cut it, and then fertilize that container that you have. And in the axils of the leaves, some smaller florets, and they'll be probably 1 to 2 inches in diameter that will develop.
And they're tasty.
And they're tasty, especially
okay,
as
cool.
it gets cooler.
The other thing is I've been growing lettuce, and I've had a really good success with I have two different containers, one that I grow romaine in, and this is all from seed, and the other one is a variety it's called an Italian mix, and it's got a lot of different types of lettuce in it. And the idea is you can harvest, you can replant through the season. And the same thing with spinach. And what happened, I replanted the spinach, and it bolted immediately.
Yep.
And then and I'm wondering what will happen. I've already started replanting the soft lettuces, and I'm about to replant the romaine. Is this a good time to do it, or should I wait?
No, I would do it now, because if you look on the package, some of the leaf lettuces, I'm assuming the Italian mix was that, it'll wait, say, 6 weeks to maturity. And if you can look at when your frost time is up in your area, which is, let's say it's around the 10th of October, you just back up 6 weeks, and that's your cutoff date for planting those.
Uh-huh.
So I would go ahead and plant those. Spinach, I'd give it a second shot. Spinach will bolt with the heat of summer and the long days. And so growing spinach during the summer months is a challenge, but in the fall, it's a quite easy thing to do.
Yep, there you go. Thanks a lot for calling, Paul. And Bob and Baldwin. On to you now. Hi, Bob.
Oh, hi, guys. See, I just wanted to make some comments. I have a small, it's a hobby orchard, about 250 trees, okay. Mixed fruits.
It sounds like
and
more than a hobby. Sounds like more than a hobby.
Yeah, it's a hobby gone a little amok, right?
Yeah.
But I wanted to comment on the caller with the dwarfing question and too much growth. And, you know, there's a couple things people have done, of course. You can use the dwarfing rootstocks, which I've used, but I've always found they had trouble in terms of anchoring it, you know, especially in windy areas. What I do instead is move from a central leader type pruning to what you call an open vase, you know, so you kind of create an umbrella look.
Yeah. Right.
And if you create that umbrella at about, somewhere between 8 and 10 feet, then those branches, the top ones, will lean on over, and then you basically can walk around the trees. Now, my trees are around 20 years old, and they're standard rootstock and standard trees, and they've all stayed at that distance. And it seems to knock down some of that excessive central leader-type growth. So that was my main comment. Hopefully can help her.
And you brought out a good point. The training is very important. I tell people when you plant that tree, that's when your training period. The first 3-4 years are very important so that you get those establish those scaffold branches. Probably the first one at about 3.5 feet, second one at about 5 feet. And for those that want to keep them relatively low growing, I don't allow any other central leader type branches to develop on that tree on any given year. And so you want the growth kind of outward. And then if you shorten out those scaffold branches, that new growth back to about 8 inches, you're going to keep a very compact tree. Yes, you can do it on standard trees. When I was at Cornell University visiting many years ago, they had some standard trees there that had trunks that were probably 18 inches, and they were only 6 feet tall.
Ah.
But they were probably 20 feet out in both directions. But but they were on, and it's just a matter of pruning and training, and they were able to do that.
Pretty cool.
I think generally my recommendation is, you know, plan to take off 25 to 30% of the tree every year, and just to keep it, as you say, I mean, mine are probably that same width, but only about 9 feet high. And to keep that, you got to really get in and get aggressive.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it'll just grow tons of suckers on you.
Yep.
And I do use that second pruning. I always do the, the late winter, but then using the July one, you can really get some of that knocked back.
Right.
What do you do with all that fruit, Bob?
Well, I just let people come pick it. My hobby is growing stuff, and I just. That's what I like to do.
He's got a lot of good neighbors.
Yeah, he got a lot of friendly neighbors, I'll bet. Thanks, Bob.
Yeah, thank you. Bye.
Great tips. David in Minneapolis. Will he turn to you now? Hi, David.
Hi, how are you? Actually, I'm in Door County, but making my way up to the Bailey's Harbor. My question is this. I took over the house a few years ago, and the fellow before me was a flower aficionado and had very elaborate beds and lots of lilies and everything from the garden center. I'm more of a vegetable guy, and I'm slowly converting some of these beds over to vegetables. And I had good luck with tomatoes and things. But what I'm finding is the soil is so dense and rich, and it tends to bind everything. And for instance, if I do a little row of carrots, I can't even get them out of the ground after it rains. Or, you know, the rain just seems to compact it. What soil improvements or amendments can I use this fall? Can I turn to there that'll give me a lighter, loamier soil and something that's going to, breathe a little more and accept compost, things like that. What can I use to improve my too rich soil?
Yeah, well, your compost is your best to go. What you're describing is the soil tightening up. It must have a lot of clay in your area.
I think a lot of this was also added in. Many of these are raised beds in a suburb. I think the guy just dumped in a lot of bags of, the really black garden center stuff.
That should still work in terms of growing good vegetables. Usually to loosen soil up, if you do a couple things. One, adding compost and working that into it, and work it down, you know, spade it down to a depth of 8 inches or so. And then the other thing is if you put mulch over between the rows, it'll keep that from getting so compact and hard from all the hard rains.
Okay. So what about materials like peat moss, things like that? Are they going to add any loft or that's, you know, separation?
That's good. That's like another compost material.
Sure.
Okay. Very good. Another quick question, if I could. He also had I inherited a big stand of a late bearing, like a September bearing raspberry. And I had experience with raspberries as a kid, but the thing I don't remember from my grandfather is how to prune them, how to put them to bed in the late fall after they've given me their fruit and you know, the first frost. Well, how do I best put raspberries to bed?
Okay, for the fall bearing types of raspberries, wait till the soil begins to freeze right around Thanksgiving, and then cut them right to the ground.
Yeah, oh, really?
Okay. All the canes, cut them right to the ground. And then next spring, they'll send up new canes and they'll start fruiting probably in, depending what it was, if it's heritage, they won't fruit till September. But
Labor Day is the first time I've seen any fruit.
Yep. But by cutting them to the ground, sometimes they'll come a little bit earlier. Autumn Bliss and Autumn Britain this year.
And again, just mulch for them is also helpful. What are raspberries like for soil?
Bark chips are good.
Very good.
All right.
And like Autumn Bliss and Britain, some of those, we had fruit before the 1st of August this year.
Wow.
Wow. I mean, they're a wonderful berry. They make great jam. They're great eating out of hand. I mean, I really, really enjoy picking them.
Yep. Thanks, David.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. All right, make me hungry talking about those berries. Let's go to Cindy in McGregor, Iowa. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. I have a question about eggplant.
Go ahead.
I have several large, very healthy eggplants. They're getting a little ungainly. Can I trim the bottom leaves off that without having that be detrimental to the plant?
Yes, you could remove them, just like on they're relative to the tomato plant. And you can remove those lower leaves, and it gives better air movement through there, fewer disease problems. Do you have fruit on them right now?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So you're all set.
But thank you.
Some people do remove the lower leaves so they can get in there and weed and things like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Email from Becky of Belleville. When's the best time to plant fruit trees, and what should be done if we must plant at a different time? Ironically, our farm schedule often gets in the way of our garden schedule.
Well, usually bare root in the spring is the best shot to go. And I tell people that they should actually till their soil the season before to knock down the weed population. As for planting, bare root in the spring, or usually the nurseries will send those out. You give them a date, let's say 15th of April or 15th of May, and they'll ship them to you to fit your seasonal schedule. For those that are having a challenge with planting during that time, you might want to work something out with a garden center. They'll place them in a container. And container plants, you can move them to your garden or yard at any time. So that's just a choice that you can make. You can even containerize them yourself if you wanted to. And you probably want a container that's 12 to 16 inches across, these plastic containers, and just water them about every other day and then plant them when you have time.
There you go. Nancy in La Crosse says, I have a peach tree. First year of peach production, I have 10 to 15 peaches. Now she's in La Crosse.
Mm-hmm.
Is it best to plant another tree for better production? If so, I'm not sure which variety or is that relevant. Would the same variety of tree be beneficial, since I'm not sure what I have now?
Yeah, lost the label. With peach trees, they self-pollinate. They're not like apples.
Okay.
And so you don't need a sink one. Usually if we got one out of two to live, we're going for it. But there's peaches out there like Reliance, Madison, and then there's the Harrow, H-A-R-R-O-W selection. If you can find them, they came out of a breeding program in Canada. There's Diamond Harrow and Harrow Beauty and a few of those, but they have the word Harrow in it for the research station name. Those I find are even hardier than those that we've been growing here in Wisconsin, like Reliance and Madison.
And Nancy also has two blueberry plants now in containers. I had planned on planting them in the ground come fall. Is that the best time, or is this the best?
If they're in a container, you can move them into their site at any time. I would prepare the site, though, for blueberries. They do like a little more acid condition.
Yeah.
So if you know what your soil pH is, if it's a little bit high, like 6.5 or above, you might want to dig a larger hole and then mix peat moss in with the soil and kind of make a specialized little bed for them. Also mulch with about 3-4 inches of bark chips to keep those roots moist, and you're in business.
And we have Christine in Stoddard has a question about potatoes. I've been digging them or just begun to dig them and have found numerous tiny white spots on the skin. The spots don't go through the skin into the potato. Do you know what this is, and can we safely eat our crop?
Well, one, you can safely eat them. What's happening with – we've had so much wet weather this year. And this one even, I read in one of the commercial potato grower bulletins that they were observing this. There's little lenticels on the potato tuber, and that's kind of a specialized cell structure.
Mm-hmm.
And with all the moisture we had, those cells have proliferated, so they're really showy
oh.
on the potato. So, yeah, they're safe to eat. Usually after you harvest, they will tend to dry down a little bit, and they aren't as obvious. But right now, if you're digging them fresh out of the garden, almost any variety you have probably show those white lenticels.
Lori in Richfield, Wisconsin. We turn to you now. Hi, Lori.
Hi. I'd like to collect a bunch of seeds from a variety of different perennials, just your basic purple coneflower and black-eyed Susans, and maybe even some annuals like zinnias. When is the best time to actually get those seeds? Could I cut the flowers and bring them in the house and have them enjoy them while they're blooming and then just let them die and then keep those seeds? Will they overwinter? Or do I have to wait until the plant actually dies itself and the seed head is dry in order to have a viable seed for next year?
Your last suggestion is the one you have to do. You can't cut and then bring them in the house because they stop maturing. So what you do is you allow the seeds to develop on the plant itself. As the seeds begin to fall, you can collect them. Some people will take a small nylon stocking or something and slip it over the head, and that way when the seeds naturally fall, they will you can collect them that way. They don't disappear on you. The other thing with a lot of those perennials, you need to plant those seeds right away. They need to go through a chilling period, which Mother Nature takes care of here in Wisconsin, that 90 days below 30 degrees. We have that here, Larry.
Yeah, I think we got that.
Anyway, that chilling period helps the seeds germinate. Some people plant them in a row in the garden and kind of mark the row so you can find it in the spring and you'll see them germinating. And then they'll transplant them to the prairie site or whatever that they want. There's some very good books out there on collecting prairie plants. And I believe the DNR has a publication. If you go on the learningstore.com, I think you can find that one on there. The Prairie Primer, which is an extension bulletin, and also has some good suggestions.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Lori. Joanne in Muskego, hello to you.
Hello. Good.
Glad to have you on. What can we do for you?
Well, I have a Granny Smith apple tree, and it's about 30 years old, and it has a black spot on the trunk, and I didn't know what that might mean for the tree.
Is it like a strip down the tree?
Yeah, it's a large, it's kind of like a, like almost like a diamond shape thing.
Yep.
It's like a, like a patch.
And is it on the west side, southwest side of the tree?
Yes, I believe so. That is the side.
Yep, that's probably winter scald or summer scald. What happened is Granny Smith tends to be a little more on the tender side, and not this year, but probably 3-4 years ago when you had real cold, and then all of a sudden the sun was out shining in February or so. It kind of warmed up the bark, and the cells started to divide, and then that night it dropped back down to 20 below, and it killed that bark tissue in that area. That's what I'm guessing has happened. Not much you can do. Just kind of baby it along, and sometimes they'll grow heal over.
Okay.
With bark.
All right, there you go. Thanks.
There's nothing I need to put on there?
Nope.
Nope.
No Band-Aid is necessary.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Bernie and Rhinelander, we'll turn to you. Hi, Bernie.
Hi, guys. Good morning. I got a question. We have a willow tree about 12, 14 feet tall, and we have these little black bugs on it, and they chew the leaves away. Anything we can do about that?
Well, it's more cosmetic than anything. And, of course, that's a Phil question. And he was here on Monday, and we blame him for the mosquitoes, so he hasn't come back. But you could use some of the ornamental which, types of insecticides, and that might reduce the population. But the life cycle is very short on those, and I would suggest that just let it happen, and the new growth that still occurs will kind of cover that up.
Okay, very good.
Thanks for calling. Gary in Black Creek says, a very wet July has put my raspberry patch in great distress. Had a good early crop from my Novas, expecting a good crop from Autumn Bliss. However, by mid-July, the leaves on the first-year canes severely began to wilt on both varieties. There are some scattered canes that still look good. Is this patch doomed by fungus, or could it be that the roots were unable to breathe because of the waterlogged clay soil?
Well, he answered that on the last half there.
Yeah.
Black Creek tends to be a heavier soil area in that part of the state. And one suggestion is if you can, I was told some of the farmers, plow two, got a two-bottom plow, plow a furrow, and make a little ridge about 6 or 8 inches high, and then plant on that ridge. And so he might want to do the same thing, kind of build up a little raised bed about 4 to 6 inches and plant the raspberries into that. That way, when it's extremely wet like we've had this year, the soil drains out of that raised bed a little more rapidly. I'm guessing you have some root rot problems. Some of the plants might make it through it and produce. But look at planting in a raised bed, and that'll help you out.
Greg in Colgate. Hello.
I had a question. Eons ago, I planted some apple varieties, pears, plums, a few things like that. A total of about a dozen trees, and they were not dwarfs or anything. And I had to keep the deer off of them, and I fenced around each plant, and I tried every repellent that was ever described to me once they grew out of their little protection cages, and everything worked for about a day or a week or depending, and eventually the deer didn't care, and they got so that the trees were eaten back so badly that I got really discouraged, and I just sort of gave up for a while, and then I noticed they just kind of took off some years later. I ended up having to cut down some of the plums and things, and now they're many years unpruned growth there, only pruned by deer, and I don't even know where to start. Is there any way I can get it?
Well, it's not Wisconsin, but I think it's Ohio has pruning unkept apple trees.
Oh.
And it's an old bulletin. If you send me an email with your name on it, or send it to Larry, one of us, and he'll pass it on to me. He's pretty good at that.
Yeah.
And anyway, I'll try to get one out to you. But basically what you probably want to do, and I know the exact type of tree that you're describing, there's no branches till maybe 6 or 8 feet as far as the deer can reach up.
Well, there's a lot of low branches now, but the whole thing is such a big, huge bush,
right.
I can't even...
What you want to do next spring is kind of open it up. You take out about one-third of the growth each year over 3 years, and you want to select certain branches that you want to save, and then... save about 18 inches between those to another layer of branches above that, and that would be your training system. But send Larry a little note.
Yeah, send me an email.
And then I have it in one of my files there. I'll send you a copy.
Great. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Bob Tomisch, Senior Lecturer in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison and UW Extension, our guest here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Bob Tomisch answering your gardening questions today. Daryl in Cumberland, you are up next. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Good.
Good. I had a question about peach seed. How do you, if you eat a peach and you got your seed, how do you get that to germinate?
Well, I'm assuming you're buying your peaches, right?
At the local farmer's market.
Usually those come out of Georgia or someplace warmer. Or maybe Michigan, and you could plant those seeds. You'd plant them right away now in the fall. The only thing is, once they start growing, that cut next winter, they'd probably freeze off. What you need to do is find varieties that are hardy here in Wisconsin. In Cumberland, you're more of a challenge than other people in the state. But you might want to look at that Harrow series that I mentioned earlier, or Madison or Reliance, and take a shot at one of those.
Yeah, this is from a local grower, so.
He has peaches in his orchard?
Yeah.
Okay, then just plant the seed. They self-pollinate, so it's going to be pretty much like whatever tree it came off of.
Yeah.
One thing I have found, and I hate to discourage, you know, a little discouragement there, is that even when you plant those seeds, the germination rate is quite low, and that is because I don't think they completely, the seed completely matures in our climate, and that could be part of the problem. But yeah, go ahead. If they're growing up there, that means they're one of the hardier varieties, and it should be just like that plant.
All right.
Okay, and if you could, do I have to trim a plum tree to get it to grow good, to produce good?
Any fruit tree you should be pruning to kind of establish scaffold branches, and you want to have enough space so that air moves through the tree and it cuts down on disease problems. So any of the trees need to go through some pruning. There's a very good bulletin, again, Learning Store, Growing Plums in Wisconsin, and that'll give you a pretty good suggestion on how to grow plums.
All right.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Again, it's UW Extension's Learning Store.
Right.
Go there, and you're going to find that publication. Carlin in Genesee, we turn to you. Hi, Carlin.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I have three questions, if I can ask them.
Okay.
First of all, I've self-diagnosed late blight on my tomatoes. All the leaves are just dying off completely, and every single tomato's got a patch, like a brownish patch. Are those edible, the parts that don't have the fungus on them?
If the fruit doesn't have a fungus on it, usually those you could, you know, consume them. If they have, you know, deterioration like spots and all that, I know that Barb Ingham is the one that gives the suggestion. She says, well, you're farther ahead to toss some of those.
And then it's not wise to leave them on the ground, right, because that fungus will be there next year?
It's going to be there. We thought that the fungus late blight wasn't going to be overwintering. It only overwintered in potato tubers up in the central part of the state and places like that. Mm-hmm. We're getting a few reports where people said, well, we cleaned up the garden or and these are commercial growers, so they really take this serious.
Yeah.
And, they felt, well, we tilled in some of the leaf tissue that was there, and you know what? It showed up next spring.
Sure.
And it could be that, we had early snow last year, a lot of snow that didn't get cold enough, but I think you're farther ahead to clean everything out of the garden. Don't move it to a compost pile. Get rid of it someplace either burn it or take and dig a hole.
In the same patch, I have downy mildew and powdery mildew. It looks like both of them on my squash.
Yeah.
So that's the same thing, isn't it?
Well, it's a disease of a different name.
Yeah.
Different type. But, yeah, all of those produce spores, and they will overwinter.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunate part is if you have a neighbor down the road and if they have the disease there, those spores are in the air.
Yeah, it's just way too moist.
Yeah.
So, okay, the other question I had then is about our raspberries. They're an earlier fruiting raspberry, so whatever that's called. You know, they're like a black raspberry. They were kind of overgrown when we moved here, and we're trying to bring them back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to being fruitful. And what do we need to do? Because we have no idea how to, like, prepare them for the winter or get them ready for next year.
Well, they'll do that themselves. But pruning is going to be the big thing to do. Right now, you might want to narrow the rows down. Take your lawnmower in there and just hack them off so you get a row that's about 18 inches wide. And then come in there and till that area that you mowed off. So you were narrowing that down. Then next spring, in those rows that you've established, you want to get out the old fruiting canes if it's a June-bearing type. Those will be kind of brownish. You'll look at them now, and they're probably dead.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah,
so we need to take those out?
Take those out, cut them close. And then the primal canes, those are the green ones.
Yeah, the new ones, uh-huh.
If you have an 18-inch wide row, you want to save about 4 to 6 per linear foot a row.
Oh, okay. So
you're taking out a lot of plant
too,
material,
huh?
Yep.
And those are the only ones that are going to have fruit next year, right?
Right, that's correct.
Okay, all righty. Good. Well, then we'll have to get in there. It's not pleasant, though, with the mosquitoes.
No, it isn't.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thanks so much for calling. Went to one of the local stores to buy, one of these hats with a netting on it. And there was another guy standing there. He's trying to get one, too. And, they were all sold out.
I wonder why.
Yeah, I wonder why. Oh, my goodness. Well, we have Jolene, who has rotten zucchini. The zucchini keep rotting before they have even 2 inches of length. What's wrong there?
Well, it's probably a type of blossom end rot that's happening. The disease is there, and the insects are carrying it from one that's already been deteriorating onto another one, and they're probably feeding on the flower end. So what I try to do suggest is that you got a little bit of a challenge. Get rid of all the old fruit that's on there, in fact, everything, and then let a whole new flush of flowers develop, and maybe you have a little bit of luck. We also have problems not during wet weather, which is right now, and that flower is so big and moist, it harbors a lot of moisture, and so you get more disease in there. The other thing is just trying to harvest them when they're, you know, 6 to 10 inches long, just kind of keep ahead of it.
Well, Dorothy from Oregon, Wisconsin, sent me an absolutely hilarious story that she wrote about zucchini and the amount of zucchini that most people have. It's called Zap the Zucchini, and I can't read it because it's too long to read. But, Dorothy, if you're listening in, shoot me an email or go to my Facebook page. If you would let me post that on my Facebook page, it's the Facebook page is The Larry Mueller Show. You have to type in The Larry Mueller Show. I would love to put it up on our page because it is really funny. So, Dorothy, if you're listening, let me know. Shoot me an email on my Facebook page. Actually, hope if you have the copy that you can send it right to the page, that'd be great. And David in Sturgeon Bay, we're on to you. Hi, David.
Oh, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got two questions, if I can, on trees in my yard. I've got a bunch of maples, more red maple, but some sugar maples. For years, I've had this black tar spot on the leaves.
Yes.
That doesn't seem to, you know, cause that much problem. But this year, many of them, the leaves are just brown and curled up and falling off already. The entire trees are basically in a fall condition or dying, it seems.
Well, they're not. I'm guessing they're not dying. What it was is that tar spot really, and not only that disease, but a few others, really had a chance to get going because of the hot, humid weather we've had.
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed that some of the maples are getting thinner. I've also noticed that when I went up to Spooner midweek this week to check a few things out at the research station, that some of the maples are even starting to show a little bit of red.
Right.
And usually those that are stressed tend to show red sooner than some of the others. You know, in other words, those that are down in the marshes and wet areas like that. But sumac is starting to show a little red. So guess what's coming, gang?
Yeah.
Okay. We don't have to pick those zucchinis too much longer.
Will those be long-term problems for those trees?
No, that's a year-by-year, and it's usually a cosmetic type of thing.
Okay.
All right.
And then I also have a crab apple tree just closer to the house, and it has also completely lost leaves.
Well, that's a apple scab that's causing that problem. With crabs, our recommendation is to buy a disease-resistant crab, and that way the leaves will be completely green. I look around here in Madison, and a lot of the crabs that aren't in that caliber are completely defoliated.
Yeah.
And they'll leaf out next year.
So that also is not a permanent condition, we hope.
No, it shouldn't be.
But obviously I can't replace that tree, or without replacing that tree, I can't make it somehow.
No.
Diseased.
Well, you can put it on a spray program like they do it with commercial apples.
But that's a lot of...
And you're spraying every 7 to 10 days or after any half-inch rain.
Yeah, that's not worth it.
No, that's not worth it.
Okay, well, I appreciate the answers.
But it will happen every year, David. Believe me. Won't kill the tree, but it'll happen every year. So you might consider a new tree. Let's go to John in Waupun. Hi, John.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Got a question for you. I got an old or tall black walnut. I have a lot of tree coverage in my property, so there's no ground to really garden. And the walnut's kind of in the back area where it's not really in the best place for enjoyment anyways. I want to plant a garden there. I know you can't, well, I can't now because of the shade, but I'm concerned about the toxins from the black walnut. Is it in the roots or is it in the tree itself?
It's in the roots, in the tree,
in
the leaves, and as the over the years, those chemicals have worked into the soil, and we've had black walnuts removed, and 20 years later, the tomatoes still won't grow. So
now, what if I were to either till up the ground and put down, say, Tyvek that would allow moisture to penetrate but not sit there? Would it stop the toxins from going up if I replace the dirt?
If you brought in new dirt, and a raised bed, like Larry had suggested, and some people make a raised bed using 8-inch 2x8s or something like that. And what you're doing is, even in your tilling process in the raised bed, you're not bringing up the soil from down below. And so what you're doing is bringing in good quality field types of soils.
Would you recommend using like a Tyvek building material that allows moisture to travel through, but
you really don't need to do it. You don't need to do that part.
Don't need to do that. Okay, no. But a raised garden would
a raised bed 8 to 12 inches.
Yeah, 8 inches at least.
And okay. If you're getting older, you can even raise it up 3 feet.
Yeah, a lot of people like to do that because it's easier to get at the plants.
Right. I've got a silver maple that had these black spots in it, and someone I thought I mentioned it one time on the radio that it was due to too much moisture in the spring.
That's correct. And those diseases start when the leaves first start growing. It's a cosmetic type of thing. This year, we might even had another reinfection or something. I'd have to talk to our pathologist, Brian Huddleston, on some more details. But, yeah, some of the silver maples are really taking a hit this year.
Thanks a lot for calling, John. Appreciate your call. Bob Tomisch, senior lecturer in the Department of Horticulture with UW-Madison and UW Extension, our guest here on Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Net. Larry Mueller here with Bob Tomisch. And Bob is answering all kinds of questions about what's going on in the lawn and garden. I hope you'll join in with yours at 1-800-642-1234. Betty in Plymouth has been waiting a while, so let's go to Betty. Hi, Betty.
Hi there. I'm the one with the cosmos question.
Okay.
I have them in several different places in my yard. Some of them are over 5 feet tall, and not a one has shown any sign of flowering. What's wrong?
That one I'm a bit lost at. It could be.
You fertilize a lot?
Pardon?
Did you fertilize?
Only when I first planted things in May.
Sometimes too much fertilizer, like Larry had brought up, causes vegetative growth and not. There are some varieties that are real late in their bloom. I would still give them a chance here late in August.
Well, they're pretty the way they are, but I was looking forward to the flowers.
There were some, I can remember back 30 years ago when we were looking at some of the cosmos varieties in the hort department, and there were some that were very late blooming. And you might just happen to have one of those. I don't know.
Well, I hope so.
So I'd give them a chance.
I will do that.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Don in Warren, Wisconsin. Hello.
Yeah, Illinois. Larry, you remember
Illinois.
The tree project I was on here? I've got about 130 crab apple trees, flowering crabs, on the parkway.
Oh, yes.
And there's about 6 different varieties.
Yes.
And they're defoliating certain ones. The leaves get yellow spots on them, and then they get brown spots, and then there's no more chlorophyll, and the leaves fall off.
Apple
some trees
crab.
Are fine, and some are...
Yeah. I wonder if we might have lost Don. Well, I tell you what, it's apple scab, isn't it?
Well, that's what it is. And what's interesting is, like he said, he's got different varieties, and some hold their leaves and some get the disease easier. There are some newer selections out. And again, there's a bulletin at the Learning Store that does list some of the disease-resistant crabs that Laura Gell has put together. And I would suggest looking for some of those as replacements.
Yeah, I think what you've got definitely is apple scab. And as Bob says, you're probably going to have to replant those. Maybe
either tolerate the disease or replant with one that the leaves will hold.
And I know your situation there in Warren, Illinois, and you might just go on a little deal. It's a community kind of thing where you plant replace a few every year.
Yeah. Yep.
And do it that way. I'm sorry we lost you. That just clipped right out. Laura in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Laura.
Hi. I have a black walnut tree in my backyard, and over the last couple of weeks it's had, oh gosh, five, six good-sized limbs just breaking off. Mm. That doesn't appear to be unhealthy, and I don't see...
Well, we've had some real winds in the last... 3 weeks, and I've noticed there's been a lot of trees losing some branches. Sometimes a branch, it might look like it's in a healthy area. If it's in a real shaded situation, It tends to be doing some self-pruning, but the winds will bring those out. So I'm guessing it's just wind damage, random, and that's the cause.
Okay. Yep. All right. They're just near my phone lines and to make sure I didn't need to do something for the tree itself to keep it healthy.
No, I think you're probably all right.
Yeah, but it's just the weather we've had.
Thanks a lot for calling. Anne in Milwaukee, we turn to you. Hi, Anne.
Hi. I have Chinese lanterns that grow on the side of my house. And we've been here 18 years. And they produce they're very nice. They produce several every year. And last year, the guys next door had siding put on their home. And when they cleaned up, they raked all the topsoil off. So this year, I didn't get any Chinese lanterns at all. And I was wondering, is there like topsoil that I can purchase and put down, or is there anything that I can do for this? Because fall is my favorite season, and I really missed them.
Did the plants not come back?
They did. The plants themselves came back, but no little, you know, first they're green and then they turn orange.
Yep.
None of those.
They haven't developed the fruit on it.
Right.
One of the things that, and Brian Huddleston, the pathologist, was talking about this a couple weeks ago, is that vinyl is an oil-based product, and the ethylene in it, when it's first put on, sometimes it has an impact on plant material.
Okay.
And so that might be one of the causes there. Usually after a year or two, the siding weathers, and you get past that. That's why I asked if the plant was completely dead or if it just was a little waning this year.
Well, they came up, but they came up really small. Usually they come up really big, and they produce a lot.
I'm not sure that is the cause, but we have found out that with some of the vinyl products like siding and decking and some of those things, we're starting to see some impact on certain plants.
I see.
There you go.
So you don't think it was the topsoil that they raked off?
I don't think so.
Okay, so the next year I can just cross my fingers and hope they come back.
There you go.
Great, thanks.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And we got an email here. After many years of bountiful tomato harvests, this year I have large plants with few tomatoes, small and not ripening. They're in a different spot than last year and have been fertilized. Any ideas why?
Probably too much fertilizer.
Yeah.
What happens is on tomatoes, you get a lot of vegetative growth, huge vines, and very few fruit that will develop on there, and that might be one of the causes. Or if they're in a shady area, you know, slight shade will cause the same thing to happen.
She also has amaryllis plants, which bloom in winter, and I plant outside in the summer. I was given some bulbs that didn't bloom in winter. I planted them outside, and one is blooming beautifully right now. Will they bloom this winter if I let the bulbs rest and plant again in January?
I've heard of people having a double bloom on some of those. But you want to allow them to dry down. I think it's for a month it recommends, and then you bring them back out. That flower was already set to go, and usually our growing season isn't quite long enough for that to happen, but you hit it on a lucky note. So,
and Karen in Eau Claire, and this is a good thing that she brought up on the Learning Store, you need to go to learningstore.uwex.edu. So learningstore.uwex.edu. If you put in something like learningstore.com, you're not going to get it. So learningstore.uwex.edu. So thanks to Karen for reminding us about that. And Bob and Jackson emails to ask about harvesting both red and white onions and prepping for storage.
Okay. That's a good question because some of the onions have ripened. Usually the top of the onion begins to dry and it falls over, or it might be a little wilted and then fall over. Usually they suggest that in your row, if over 50% of the tops have folded over, then it's time to harvest the onions. And this year, it's going to be very important to do so because it's so wet.
Yeah.
I had a few people already say that even though they harvested them right away and tried to dry them, that the there was those black spots, you know, fungus growing inside the different scales on the onion. Okay, so when you dig them, allow them to dry for about 2 weeks. Some people will lay them out on a sidewalk or something during the day just to kind of let that outer two, three layers of leaf tissue dry down and then move them into storage. They don't need a cold storage. I've hung them in the furnace room. Usually what I do is I try to hang the by the leaves
by the tops,
up above,
yeah.
Yep, and just hang them there and cut off what you need.
And we got Marie and Amory says, my garden's not doing very well this year. I believe it's because I haven't amended the soil for a few years. I'm in northwestern Wisconsin and have heavy soil. I'm planning on having a soil sample done this fall. What else should I do this fall and then next spring to bring my soil back to become a well-producing vegetable garden and probably a little mulch?
Well, the source of organic matter, I think, is a big thing. When you receive your soil test back, it'll talk about nutrients, but also there should be a box in there that talks about organic matter. And we always try to shoot for, 3% or something like that. Adding organic matter, you have a few choices. You can either make your own. Some people gather grass clippings and everything else through the growing season, or just go out and buy 2-3 bales of alfalfa hay from a farmer that has few weeds and work that into the soil, and or even use it as mulch right now. Spread it between the rows as a mulch, and then it'll start deteriorating, and then you just simply spade that back into the garden, and that'll complete the degeneration. That's another way of doing it. Some people at this time of the year will plant soybeans, just field-run soybeans, or oats that farmers would grow. Oats works very nice to increase the organic matter because you can plant it, usually around September or something like that. It greens up, looks really lush, and then the first frost or hard freezes, it's all over, and you can just work it back in the soil. So adding organic matter would be a good step, and you can either do it through the green manure product or you can even go out and purchase it.
Yep, absolutely. Fred in Prairie du Sac, on to you now. Hi, Fred.
Hi. I have two apple trees that we planted about 4 years ago, and one of them has been producing apples. We've taken them off. They're pretty small, and then the other one hasn't. This last year, we had, the spring, we had this cobweb-type material that formed in the yolk of some of the branches.
Yeah.
And our neighbor said, oh, you got bugs. And she came over, took the stuff out, and sprayed our trees with something. I don't know what it was. Since then, we haven't really done anything to them. But the leaves are, they haven't really come out as much as they normally do. Some branches don't have any leaves. Some of the leaves are all curled up. It doesn't look healthy at all. And I'm wondering what we should do.
Well, I think you've got two problems, I'm guessing now. One was, that webbing you saw is usually a type of tent caterpillar, and they tend to prefer plums over apples, but they're not selective. And so that was an insect problem. The browning of the leaves that you're describing has me wondering if you don't have fire blight in the tree.
Yeah.
And if you see look at a branch that was growing this year, and it kind of has a hook on it, like a shepherd's hoof, a hook that we often describe, then you've got fire blight. About all you can do is the last part of browning in that, you go down about 1 to 3 feet below that and cut off the whole branch. Eventually, it will kill the whole tree, given time.
Oh, okay.
So,
an unrelated question. We had the potato beetles, I guess. I'm not sure what they're called. Other than that, we took a row of potatoes, and last year we had them for the first time. This year we had them again. We sprayed with a product called 7.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't seem to make any difference. They just kept coming back. And I'm wondering if there's something else we should use.
Well, 7 will do it. There's some biological insecticides that do work. It's a BT product, but it's labeled for potatoes, and you have to buy the certain strain that'll work. But one of the things the potato beetle does is that as fall approaches, it grows out into a rough area. In other words, grass or if you have a hedgerow or something like that, they overwinter and then they walk back to the garden. And so if you want to get rid of some of those where they tend to overwinter, that would be one thing. The other thing is you might want to plant a few eggplants right on the edge of your garden, and you'll see them show up at the eggplant first. They prefer that plant over the potato, and then you know when it's time to start your spray program.
Okay. All right, thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Tony in Winona, Minnesota, on to you.
I'm good.
Good. What can we do for you?
I keep killing my tomatoes. Bottom rot on the bottom of the tomato, even the green ones, just rot from the bottom up.
Blossom end rot?
You mean the whole stem?
Actually, I had a couple plants I had to pull because the whole stem was rotten.
Oh, the stem, not the fruit.
The fruit is the most. I had two where the stem actually did it.
Yeah.
It's usually just the fruit. The few I have left, the few fruits are the ones that are rotten.
Yep. Usually that's a result of dry weather, which we haven't had this year, so that shouldn't have been a problem.
Well,
you haven't had old black
last year too.
Yeah, you haven't had a black walnut in that area for some time, have you?
There might be. It's on a hillside, so there may have been one.
Or if there was one there and it was taken out. Usually the tomato plants start growing and they die at about 8 weeks into the growing period.
Yeah, that's about
kind
right.
Of yellowish.
They were doing really good. They look beautiful. About 2 months into it, they just
crashed. Could have been
so that might be the possibility. You might want to go to the raised beds that we were describing earlier.
Yeah, earlier, okay.
I've got mine in some large containers, and they're doing great.
Sure. And you don't need three or four for fresh eating. If you're going to can or something like that, well, then you need to either grow more or go to the farmer's market. They have a tremendous supply of vegetables this year.
Okay. One more question. Can you plant raspberries in the shade?
No. You can plant them there. They will grow, but they're not very productive. Most fruit crops, raspberries and currants and gooseberries perform best out in the full sun.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. And Bill in Greenleaf, your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hey, I have a pear tree that all the leaves are completely turning brown. It's pretty much infecting the whole tree. And it's also happening on my plums and my apples. Is there anything I can do, or is it just dead?
Is it whole branches that are turning brown?
Yeah.
Okay. What I would suggest...
Turning brown and wilting off.
Yep.
Like.
I would suggest that you went and did a Google search for fire blight on apple. And fire blight impacts all the fruit trees. And probably what has happened, I'm just guessing, is that... Did you prune last spring?
Yes, we did.
Okay. If you pruned out one that was already infected, what you're doing is spreading the bacterial disease to the other trees. So
okay.
I'm suggesting if you could find a bulletin on fire blight that really goes into some details that will describe the disease, and you can see if that looks like what you have. You can send a sample in for confirmation to our pathology lab. That's a choice. But follow through on that. About all you can do is really get ahead of the pruning, and then every time you do a prune, you soak your pruning shears in a 10% Clorox solution, Clorox and water, or 70% alcohol, and that kills the bacteria that might be on the pruning shears to keep you from spreading it to the other plants.
But so it's on all the plants and they're fine? Like they haven't been the plum trees hasn't produced in like...
Well, that and production have nothing to do with. It's the browning of leaves you described to me. So, but why don't you start out with that publication and take a look at that, and that'll give you some details. And you can say, hey, I got it or don't. If you want confirmation, send a sample into a pathology lab. If you Google University of Wisconsin Pathology Lab, and it'll come up and it'll suggest how to submit samples and that type of thing. If you have difficulty, send either me or Larry an email, and then I'll get you the correct website.
All right. Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. John in Schofield, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Pruning lilacs, I think you're supposed to take out about a third of the stems and stuff, but when's the best time to do that, the fall or the spring? Or just when's the best time to do it? And I'll listen on the air. Thanks a lot.
Okay, what you're doing is we call it rejuvenation, where you're reducing the height of the plant and getting new shoots to grow. The best time to do that is early in the spring, February, March, before we see new growth occurring. When you take out about one-third of those stems, the new ones will grow this year. And next spring, when you're taking out the other third of the tall stems, you want to snip off the top couple inches on the new shoots, and that'll force them to branch out, and you'll have a nice thick shrub again.
Very good. Julie up in the UP. Hi, Julie.
I just had a question about a few plum trees that I got from a local orchard, and we planted them probably about 5 years ago, and they don't even blossom.
Are you in full sun?
Yes, full sun.
And the person was growing them close by you?
Yeah, probably within 8 miles.
Okay, and they were getting flowers and stuff?
Oh, what was that?
I said they were getting flowering and fruit.
Oh, I think, don't listen on the radio.
Oh, we're losing.
Okay. I was asking if the person that was growing the plums, if they were getting flowers and fruit, because occasionally there are some varieties that are just not hardy enough for the cold temperatures, especially the blue plums. They tend to be more tender than some of the others, and you're up in a little bit harsher area of the state. Full sun would be another important thing. Another thing that impacts plums is they flower so early in the spring, frost comes through.
Yeah.
And your friend might not be in that frost pocket, but you are. And this was a year we had plenty of frost that came through, and a lot of the plum population or the fruit just didn't have a chance to even start.
On to Shane in Sheboygan. Hi, Shane.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I got a quick question pertaining to strawberries, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I have two varieties, Tristar and Tribune.
Mm-hmm.
I plant them earlier in May. Somehow the fruits are rather small, the size of like little fingers and stuff. And when they're like ripe or red, it's not fully, like, seems like the fruit's not fully formed all the way to the tip of the fruit. What happened?
Well, I think you might have, it's called cat facing, and I'm guessing you might have an insect that's causing that. And I can't think of which one it is. But anyway, it's one that feeds on the flower stem and sucks the juice out, and it causes the fruit to be small and kind of cat-faced. If you have that, there's a bulletin calling Growing Strawberries in Wisconsin, and it'll probably have that characteristic described in the bulletin. And you have to come in with an insecticide to take care of that. Mm-hmm. There are two or three insects that cause it, like tarnished plant bug might be a problem, but there's the strawberry weevil, which might cause it. So there's a few insects. So I'm guessing you have an insect problem.
So if you go to the Learning Store, and here's how you do it. Go to learningstore.uwex.edu. That's learningstore.uwex.edu. And you can get a copy of that book.
Right, and it'll suggest in there the spray schedule that you should follow to control that insect.
And we got a call in from the author of the Zap the Zucchini article that I mentioned earlier. She just called in to say that she has my full permission to post her article on the Facebook page. So what we'll do is we'll get that posted on my Facebook page. It really is funny. And again, for the Facebook page, I've got a personal one that's just Larry Mueller, and I've got another one for the radio show, and it is titled The Larry Mueller Show. And if you just go there, The Larry Mueller Show, you can join up on my Facebook page, and we send some articles. I've got some pictures. I got at least one picture from yesterday's trip to the Brewers game, which was a lot of fun. So I've got that, and we will put up on the Facebook page this article by Dorothy Cruz, and she called it Zap the Zucchini. You got a shortage of zucchini? Well, I don't. There aren't a whole lot of people out there that have a shortage, but there are a few out there, and so we'll get that article posted. Again, it's at The Larry Mueller Show, that Facebook page. And I think on our station's Facebook page, there's a whole bunch of pictures from yesterday. I believe they posted them already. Bob, always a pleasure. You'll be back soon?
We'll schedule another day.
We can schedule another day for sure. And we mentioned Phil Pelletieri because there were some bug questions. Actually, Phil's going to be on the program on Monday.
Yeah, ask if the mosquitoes are still around.
Yeah. So Monday after 11, Phil Pelletieri talks about insects and mosquitoes probably mostly. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.